Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Pete, joined by Darius and Mike. And boy, one of my favorite things in life is the morning after a good-ass Lakers win. There's no coffee or espresso ever invented to match it. Lakers get a shorthanded win yesterday, returning home from a road trip against the Miami Heat, against a Heat team that had Jimmy and Bam and Lowry. Jimmy and Bam were both very good in the game, but Lakers pulled it out. Really good team win. Dennis Schroeder was amazing. We'll get into him a little bit more, but also Russ, TB, really good team win. And just they fought through some injuries. Kendrick Nunn got a stinger, I think, in his shoulder. Dennis was incredible. He got clocked in the face early on with an elbow, then turned his ankle what looked pretty badly in the fourth quarter, and then still went on to dominate down the stretch. And also Troy Brown missed as well. So hopefully we get updates on them soon. But just a great team win, D. I'm so proud of the team. And I'm starting to see kind of the fruits of their labor over the course of the first half of the year, of kind of the winning today's, staying with it, sticking with it, even if the results don't quite get there. And I was just so happy to see that a team win like that last night without LeBron. So I'd love to hear your thoughts, man. What do you take away from the Miami game?
Well, I'm glad you added in that last part about without LeBron, because all of the injury stuff and LeBron wasn't there at all, right? And so That was when we previewed the game a little bit. Yesterday, LeBron was listed as questionable, but it was with ankle soreness, or, you know, like he's been dealing with the bad ankle pretty much all season. And so it was a question of whether or not he would tolerate that after playing an amazing road trip, right? And so we definitely gave LeBron his flowers the last few pods. But Mike, a few hours before game time, you're sending us the update telling us, hey, LeBron's going to be out. And in the text thread, we were like, oh, well, damn it, basically. Like, what's this game going to look like? And credit to Pete. Pete said, I think we could beat this team with a certain amount of effort. It's probably going to require Miami, though, to not necessarily be at their best. And one of the reasons why this game was what it was, and why we're also, I don't know, high on life this morning, is that Miami was themselves. And they did play mostly to their level in terms of what you'd expect, particularly from Bam and Jimmy. And the guys who didn't perform up to their level was specifically because the Lakers were doing things in order to take that stuff away.
Yeah.
And I was super proud of the way that the Lakers, and we talked about this, took lessons from the recent game against the Heat and applied those to this game. They weren't perfect. They still had too many turnovers in the first half. They still got beat on the offensive boards. But some of that stuff is just like, that's the way the game goes when you're undersized and you don't have LeBron and you have to try to manufacture baskets with like more driving and kicking and all of this stuff. The ball's going to get sprayed around a little bit more. You're going to kick it out of bounds a little bit more. And the Heat are a good defensive team and they are physical. And so, Mike, I thought that when you take into account, forget the individual performances for a second, because we will get to all those, but just the mentality of the team going in shorthanded. Talk to me a little bit about that idea of like, we don't got our guys, but we feel like we still got enough to come and play a good team. I know you've seen plenty of that over your career of following the NBA. And so did you see any of that sort of glint in the players' eyes of, I've got an opportunity tonight to go out there and kick the other team's butt when no one expects us to? Like, what was that like from your perspective yesterday?
You know, that's interesting because I didn't necessarily sense that any different from usual, other than the chip that is collectively on the shoulders of Dennis Schroeder and Russell Westbrook and Patrick Beverley, which is sort of always there. But, you know, I think that combined with LeBron being out, we did see it early on. And then the other guys that are on the court too, Thomas Bryant is what we last year, I think, affectionately referred to as not having enough of the try-hard type variety on the court. And he certainly fits in that category. And Wenyen Gabriel certainly fits in that category. So it kind of, in that sense, it sort of worked. It was interesting. Before the game, a lot of the national media folk are around because it was an ESPN game. And so I'm catching up with certain people here and there. And my buddy George Sedano is doing the sideline for ESPN. And Mike Breen was there. And so people are kind of asking, hey, what's going on with the team? And some people on the Heat as well. And the vibe was more like, this is going to be a tough one for the Lakers. Not sort of, we'll see. They've been pretty plucky. Like, these guys are going to compete. It really did feel like they were just going to be a little bit too short because, A, in that building at Crypto.com Arena now, teams are not going to, like, once they come in, they're not going to just take that night off. That's just not what typically happens, even if guys like LeBron are out. And then also the energy of the Laker fans in the building who hadn't gotten to come to a game in a while, because the team has been gone, save for one game in Charlotte against Charlotte for the last couple of weeks, were excited to be there, even though LeBron wasn't playing. It's the Lakers are back in town. And so the energy in the building was good, but that typically means in this kind of setting that the opponent, in this case, Miami, especially because of the way that they play, are probably going to be fine. So once the game started, I did kind of get that sense that it was going to be a closer game maybe than predicted, but it always seemed to be building towards Miami making a run up until the point that it wasn't. So let me kind of kick that back to you guys. And was there a point of the game where you started to think, yeah, I think they can actually hold them off here?
I would go the opposite. I sent y'all a text message and I said, this game is slipping away. This looks like it's going to turn, and it's going to turn in Miami's favor, Pete. And so I'll kick that to you. There was a point where the Lakers got down by, I think, 7. And Bam had just come back into the game. And that was the stretch where I was just like, whenever it was only one of Jimmy or Bam, I thought the Lakers were hanging tight. Whenever it was both of them in the game at the same time, I thought, well, Miami's just better. And they're going to pull away eventually. And so I saw it start to turn and I was just like, it's going the other way. And so where were you at when that started to happen?
It certainly felt like there was an inevitability because we don't really have much for Jimmy at all. And we don't have anything for Bam in terms of defensively that we can do. And so there's just a certain amount of that's going to add up. And so like the start of the third quarter, they just went right into the post with Jimmy versus Pat Bev. And like, whatever the genius that Pat Bev has on defense, Jimmy Butler has on offense, and so that evens each other out. And there's a reason why flyweights don't fight welterweights or middleweights don't fight heavyweights. Like, that size difference just made it like there was nothing Pat Bev could do. Like, he could put in all the effort and good technique and all of that. It's just you're going to lose that. And so there was a certain degree of like, well, yeah, they can go to that every time. You can have all sorts of good things going on in the rest of your defense, but if you have that, it just breaks the whole thing. And so in watching that game, it did feel like there was a certain Jimmy plus Bam down the stretch. And plus their history, they said on the broadcast last night, Miami had, I think they said the best net rating in clutch time in the NBA. And that makes sense, right? With a guy like Jimmy and just kind of vets, they're one of the prime responsible adult teams in the NBA in terms of how they play. And when you've got that combined with a legit star and Jimmy and Bam as well, even though he's more of a two-way guy, it just seemed to add up to more talent than what the Lakers had. But that's where I want to talk about Dennis, is that ability to absorb the usage and like score down the stretch. Him and he had 14 points in the fourth. TB had 11. These are two vet men guys giving us 25 in the fourth quarter. And that ability, again, to score down, down the stretch. And that is how we were able to keep up with them, D, is we were able to actually score pretty much every time. Russ had some big buckets around the rim that him plus TB, I think, provide a certain amount of ability to win a rock fight, even if it's not the prettiest. Like sometimes Russ will be tripping and stumbling and bumbling to the basket and then hit a guy with a pump fake. And then two guys go jumping in the air and they land on him and it's an and one. That happened a couple times last night. And so it's not the prettiest basketball, but between him and TB kind of thrashing around along with Dennis's on-ball ability and ability to commandeer an offense, even down the stretch and still provide the ability to score, just all of that was like, when you are missing your star players over the course of the season, a team that has good health at that point of the season, no matter how good they are, there is a certain degree of like, hey, tonight's my night. I can step up and, you know, score 25, 30 points, and we're still going to play good defense. But most of all, Mike, we have the belief that we can win the game in the first place. And so that's been one of the things that's really stood out to me lately is we were talking about the team looking demoralized not too long ago. And no, they went out in this game. We're like, screw you. We're going to win this game. And they did.
Well, so Schroeder in the fourth quarter to me was the difference maker and kind of the guy that took the Lakers over the top. And he was the E-Honda thousand hand slap. Like Miami couldn't really handle him. And this happened even after he rolled his ankle. And by the way, he seemed like he got near concussed in the first half. He took such a hard elbow to the face and was able to kind of battle through that. And this is Dennis Schroeder, though. He is the whole that's tough thing. That's true. He is a warrior in that context. This is a guy that really always is going to give you what he has. And so 5:41 to go in the fourth quarter, that's when he gets that foul. And he hits the two free throws after he rolls the ankle. So goes over to the bench, and Darvin Ham and the trainer are trying to tell him, if you limp at all, you're sitting. And he said, no, I'm fine. I'm fine. So he goes back in. Russ steals the ball from Bam, and that's when Dennis hits that corner three. And to me, I'm in the opposite corner, and I was watching live, so I didn't see what it looked like on the monitor. But it almost looked like he gave it an extra, like tried to make sure he got his elevation on his jumper from the corner and got that thing up in the air, and it went home. And that was kind of that moment for me where, okay, it was 92-90 at that point. 5 minutes left. And it just, when that shot goes in after the guy hurts his ankle, there's a certain mental blow that the other team has, I think, as opposed to, okay, this is going to go in that direction. And then from that point on, he just starts blowing by defenders as the Lakers can't get anything else going in the half court against a pretty staunch Miami defense that's playing off and is sinking into the paint as they always do, but in part, especially because Russ is on the floor. And he ends up hitting 9 free throws in the fourth quarter. Goes 9 for 9, including the two that seal it. And that's plus the layup that he makes. So that to me was the difference ultimately. And they needed some player to step up into that kind of elite scoring percentage type thing. And it was the free throw line that got Dennis there. Because, you know, he didn't shoot the ball amazingly. It was 8 for 15, which you'll definitely take. But to go 12 for 14 from the free throw line on a night that Jimmy Butler only gets there 4 times and Bam only gets there 5 times against what Pete had just referred to as not necessarily the best matchups defensively to go against those guys, to me, was what won the Lakers the game late.
See, so this is where one layer deeper is the schematic stuff that the Heat do and how this specific version of the Lakers was built to take that down, right? And so even without LeBron, so LeBron is the type where when he has the ball, he will say, okay, you're a switching defense. Come get a guard for me, and I'm going to attack that guard. And then, but because of the lineup construction that is often around LeBron, it is like, okay, well, the guys who are on the court with you down the stretch, it could be Russell Westbrook, but lately it's been for sure Thomas Bryant. It's been for sure Dennis Schroeder. And then it's been some combination of like defender types, whether it's Austin or Lonnie or Pat Bev potentially. But no one is scared to let those guys shoot. Everyone is scared of the ball. And LeBron at this stage of his career is not 2010 LeBron, first step god, that basically gets by you with one dribble and then is elevating and there's nothing to do for him. Go watch how LeBron dunked all over the Pistons in that first run, like his I've arrived moment. And it's just like, oh no, that's a different dude than the dude that is here now. And so this version of the Lakers, though, that was Dennis Schroeder with the ball, Pete. And we had talked about like, oh, well, where can the Lakers give the Heat problems? And one of the things that I mentioned was, well, the Lakers have speed, right? Like Russ is fast.
Yep.
Dennis is fast. And if they pressure with their quickness and with their speed, they can hurt some of Miami's switching style mm-hmm. that they play. And Dennis, that's where Dennis is at his best, is he gets a switch. And he sort of lulls you to sleep with that high dribble. And he's just sort of out there like, oh, and then he's got that slow wind up for his jumper. And so yes. he makes it seem like he's going to wind up and he's almost bringing the ball up, but nope, dribbling it again. And then he gets you to raise up in your stance a little bit. And then he gets down in his like a sprinter and he is by you. And mm-hmm. he did that all game. And it was, to me, it was that element of the, no, you can't stay in front of me. And as much as Jimmy and Bam are these defensive maestros, and both of them are, they had Tyler Hero on the court as well. And Dennis was singling him out. And he was just like, who is Hero guarding? Come screen for me. And then that to me, Pete. Yep. That and then TB on the other side of that being
I was
like,
gonna bring that up. Yep.
Yeah, no. So please talk to me about TB about the switching too, because he benefited from that as well.
Before TB, just real quick, Russ was doing that to Strus as well. What you were talking about with yeah. Dennis and using his speed. And Dennis plays at such an interesting pace. I don't think there's another player in the league that plays with the exact same pace that he does. Just very, very interesting player. We'll talk more about that later. But yeah, Russ had a couple of sweet crossovers on guys. And that's where what we were talking about yesterday about that athleticism difference is like Russ is a way better athlete than Max Strus. And Dennis has that speed advantage and things like that. But TB down on the inside, Darvin made a comment about how we should go into the post more when teams switch against us, when TB is in there, because he's so patient down there, Mike. And one of the things I would always tell my bigs is when a big would rush, like, because and I have empathy for it. There are a lot of bodies down there, a lot of arms. They get fouled like 10 times as often, 10 times more than it actually gets called. So there can be bigs that can kind of rush around the basket or when they're swarmed by smaller players. And what I would always tell them is like, yo, you're going to be bigger than him in like 2 seconds too. You don't have to rush. You could just be patient, strong with the ball. And TB's really good with his ball fakes. And so that's one thing he was doing to Strus down low is he'd get the ball down there and he wouldn't rush it. You keep the ball high. Darius was waxing poetic about that in the text thread last night and keep the ball high. And he got such good touch with either his left hand or his right hand. And so both him and Dennis, Mike, to me, are guys that are both the try hard mentality, but also have some skill and ability and talent to pair with that, that are really just building out, I think, a new middle class for this team in terms of talent. Let's take a break. When we come back, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You know, another thing that Darvin mentioned, and this was just before or after the game, he kind of hit on it both times, but when the stars are out, and specifically LeBron and AD, the opportunity that's there for other players, and in this case, like Thomas Bryant, is such that they're going to be able to have a different level of confidence and a different level of feel once those guys come back. And it gets you thinking about the roster. And Bryant, he's really gotten a lot better from where he was at training camp versus where he is now. And the biggest reason for that is that he's had a lot of game reps that he did not have in the previous couple of years as he returned from his ACL injury. And he's got the talent, but he pairs that he really genuinely does play hard and he does practice hard. And so he's the kind of guy that's going to get better. And he also has some limitations, which we've discussed, and we saw some of those on the defensive side of the court. And that's, again, where, man, how Anthony Davis was playing and where he had gotten to. And now you've got Thomas Bryant up to this point, who would be, I think, in some ways an ideal backup type center to run up and down with Russ, to come in, to give you some real good minutes, but you don't necessarily have to use him in matchups like against Bam Adebayo or Nikola Jokic and so on. And that's that part where you're right back to, even, you know, the Lakers have this win and there's still this uncertainty about AD. And we don't have to spend more time on that now. It's just that it's kind of back to the slotting nature that you would like with Bryant, but that's not available right now. So where can he grow on the defensive end? What can they do to better cover for him in certain instances? And clearly they did some of that because Miami wasn't, you know, they weren't that efficient offensively. And as it certainly is not as much as they could have been. So that's why I'm kind of curious where you guys think the Lakers can, what kind of level they can get to defensively, because this is the reality right now. Bryant is the starting center and they're going to have to continue to figure out how to win games, which they've done some here in the last couple of weeks.
Well, I think an important part of that, Mike, is you support the other players on the court defensively by doing your job at the most supreme level that you can individually as a supporting player to that big. And so this is where I want to get back to Dennis Schroeder a little bit. And so Jimmy was having his way with whoever, right? But one of the things about Jimmy, and this is true of Bam as well, is that their aggression level, there is like regular season aggression level for these players, and then there is playoff level aggression. And Jimmy is not going to break out playoff level aggression, no. Jimmy Butler, until the playoffs. It's just like, talk about patience, Pete. That dude, he has patience for that, right? It's just like, he ain't opening gifts until Christmas morning.
Well, the reason being, that man played for Tom Thibodeau for years and played some hard defense and big minutes, man. It's a calculation, right? I only got so much of that in me. And so that's one of the reasons, like, he's really a playoff superstar. You know, he's one of the guys that I think flies under the radar because he isn't at the top of the points per game leaderboard at any point. But give me, like, that dude in the playoffs, man. Like, he's one of the best players in the league.
100%. And so he did take a couple of threes where guys sagged off and he did get aggressive and he went to the offensive glass and he did a bunch of Jimmy Butler things and he was great. He was fantastic. And Bam had 30 points mostly just by going to the offensive glass and then also getting middle every single time.
That little mid-range floater. Yeah, that's his shot.
And
too.
He goes middle from both sides of the court. And so he's a tricky player to defend and he gets into his jumper either way. So Bam had 30 and Jimmy had 20 something. It's just like, oh, look at these dudes. They're unstoppable. But the third piece of that, and one of the engines to their offense for real, is Tyler Hero. Because Hero is their main pick and roll ball handler. And he is also their elite handoff action player who then takes handoffs from Bam and takes handoffs from Jimmy and plays in two-man game. And Dennis shut all of that down. He closed that door. And that's one of the ways, Mike, that you help support a player like Thomas Bryant, is they want to attack you in the pick and roll. Well, guess what makes it hard is when the guard won't get screened. Like if the guard won't get screened, then that's a then 2-on-2 matchup, Pete. And there is no like, oh, this guy's getting downhill on me to attack me. And it was only the plays where Dennis did get screened or they gave up a switch that then Thomas got engaged by the ball handler. And it's just like, oh, well, oh, these limitations are back. But all of those plays with Dennis on Hero, I thought that was like low key the difference in the game. Hero has 9 points on 14 shot attempts. He goes 4 for 14, doesn't really get to the free throw line at all. And all of that was basically with Dennis defending him. And so in terms of that question that Mike brought up about supporting TB, I think it has to come from the guards and you're just going to have to survive as much as you can and hope that you've got enough with him there.
So we've got three guards that are annoying. Like they can get up underneath you. They're going to give up something in terms of height and or strength. But between you, the way you were describing Dennis Schroeder also describes how Pat Bev defends, that ability to get over the top of screens and just kind of get into your jersey. And yeah, you may be able to shoot over the top of him, but it's all the stuff that happens on the ground, which is more than you'd think in the NBA. But, and so like your gather, your the way you get into your shot, the way that you normally get clean off of a screen, there's ways to win the ground game for a small player that, yeah, once the ball gets up in the air and Tyler Hero elevates, there's not much Dennis Schroeder is going to do about that or a Pat Bev, but those ground wars, Mike, we've got guards that can win those with Dennis and Bev at the top of that, but also Austin, right? And he does it in a slightly different way, but he's also very annoying. That's why he's always drawing these offensive fouls and you know, shoulder to the chops type of thing. It's like these guards that kind of get up into you and then just everybody else kind of doing their job in terms of rotations and tagging. And that's been one of the things that I was so bummed to see Troy Brown. I hope we get some good news on him, but his like attention to detail defensively lately and just effort and that like extra drop to the level of the ball, basically that extra rotation that you have to be really locked in to get to that level of the sequence. He's been doing so well. And I think that's kind of that's what the rest of the team has been doing. And so that was TB had a rough stretch for the first three quarters of that game defensively. And then by the fourth quarter, I thought that our ability to do that and then also just outscore them, right? Like to some degree with TB on the floor, it's going to be like, yeah, we got to outscore them as opposed to lock them up down the stretch. So all of that, I think, contributes to kind of answering your question.
That's all good stuff. I think that with Troy, that's the kind of thing where, you know, I'm not optimistic about like when a player leaves like that and it's a strain, you know, usually that means that it's going to be at least some amount of time. It's different from getting a Charlie horse or something like that, that might be bruised and you can't run on it that night, but you know, it'll heal up after a couple of days. So fingers crossed on that, but yet another blow there. And then we learned that we got a little more information about Lonnie Walker, and it had started with the tailbone. And then last night was because of the knee. And Darvin Ham said that it was a little bit of tendonitis and on kind of the load leg, the plant leg when Lonnie's running. So that is something though, that, you know, tendonitis, essentially just anybody that has a sore knee, you can ascribe tendonitis to some extent to it. And many, I don't want to say most, but many NBA players deal with this pretty routinely. So hopefully that's something where he's not just hopefully, they're going to need him to come back and sort of take that rotation spot. But then it brings them back to going to some smaller lineups when Troy Brown had kind of been one of the guys that had enabled this new, at least slightly bigger lineups in addition to Juan Toscano-Anderson. And that is where you start to get back into what the last several Lakers seasons have been like, where it's just whack-a-mole and somebody comes in and then somebody else goes out. And it's just so difficult for them to maintain this sense of continuity, but we'll see. We'll hopefully get some information on Troy Brown Jr. later today. But for now, you know, I didn't love the way that he went out of the game. And so it's a concern for sure.
Yeah. I'm sort of with Mike on this in that if you have to leave a game with like any sort of muscle strain, calf, quad, groin, anything, and you are not able to return. Like, it's one thing if you're able to return and the coaches are just like, well, we'll give him the rest of this game off just because like we're doing okay without him. But if you're actually unable to return, I feel like you're going to be out. Like, to me, it's not likely that you're ready a day and a half later, right? And so I am hopeful, but I'm not optimistic about Troy. I am thankful that JTA has sort of reemerged as someone who can play some, right? He found himself out of the rotation even before he got hurt, and then he got hurt, and it's sort of just like, okay, well, now that he's back to doing some JTA things. I think he is an interesting connecting player, and it'd be super helpful if he hit his three ball, right? A couple of games ago, he was. And so if he can be, Pete, like a low to mid 30s three-point shooter, then every couple of games hit two, or, you know, or like he takes two, he makes one, or he takes three, he hits one. It's just like, okay, well, at least you're a threat and you're a cutter and you're going to go out there and defend. I think Nunn's going to have to play. Like, Max is going to have to play. Max is trial by fire for Max in some of these minutes, man. Like, he's out there. It's just like, hey, go guard Jimmy Butler. Right? It's just like, these aren't the most ideal situations for a 19-year-old who...
I'm all about throw him into the deep end, man. Like, I think that's great experience that even if it doesn't look good now, it'll bear some fruit down the line.
100%. But this is where, like, I don't want to talk too much about AD because I think we should save that for when we have a real update. But this is where, like, I hate to harp on things that we've harped on a ton of times before, but this game specifically reinforced the idea to me that's just like, this team is worth investing in. It is worth thinking about how you want to build things out. They're a team that is going to fight. They're a team that's going to scrap. And that's the personality of a lot of the players that are are here now. And that was not necessarily as true last season.
That's an understatement.
Well, it's, you know, I'm being kind, but it's just like, that's what it was last year. And so Wenyan, TB, Dennis, Pat Bev, these guys, JTA, like, they're scrappers, right? And LeBron, like, give LeBron a group of tryhards and it's just like, he's got something, right? Because LeBron is like one of the most gifted players ever and one of the smartest players ever. And what he needs around him at this stage of his career, especially as much as shooting or anything else, is motor. It's guys who are going to get after it and are going to keep pushing and keep pushing and see the wall and not see it at all at the same time. Right. And just run right through it. And this group is that, Mike. And so the win against Miami aside, you've got LeBron playing at the level that he's playing at. And then you've got these guys who can step up and are going to continue to fight regardless. And I think they need to try to give this team a chance. And then AD is lurking out there somewhere and maybe he comes back and he plays, maybe he does, like, whatever. But that all combines to me of, like, invest in these guys now while you have these guys and this particular mix, because I'm starting to see it come together in ways that intrigue me and excite me for a team that is four games under 500.
And at the same time, as we haven't done any Western Conference standings watchings, I'll just do a 30-second update on this. You got some teams in basic free fall, right, where Utah has lost five in a row. They have they've won three out of their last 10. They now have the same number of losses as the Lakers. The Timberwolves have the same number of losses as the Lakers, even though they've won two in a row. And all of this goes back to the Lakers just instead of Anthony Davis going down and what it looks like the first couple games in terms of a drop of energy. They have now, first because of LeBron and LeBron picking things up, and then now kind of the collective group without him, they have restored some hope for themselves. Forget what everyone else thinks. Forget the standings. Forget all that. But from our point of view now, you've got these teams that are falling some. Phoenix is another team that's a big-time faller. Booker's going to be out for another while longer. They are one game over 500. They've lost four in a row. So there are now some teams that are doing the dropping. And we had hinted at, we're not quite sure who it is. One of these teams will have an injury. Utah, we thought it would probably be for different reasons. And Minnesota, because of some chemistry issues and their own injuries. So They're at least now, even with AD out, there is this kind of path that they can all point to of saying, hey, look, who knows? Let's keep gearing towards one of these spots, and it's within reach. Let's go. And I think that's been what the mindset for a lot of these guys is. And that's good. That's what it has to be. And then how they sort of figure things out on a day to day, we'll try to cover here on the podcast feed. But it's at least it's a different picture than we had even as soon as 7 days ago.
Yes. And they're now after their 2-10 start again, TB and Dennis came back right after this. So I think it sort of speaks to their degree of value. We probably get a couple of those first 12 games if TB and or Dennis play in those. And since then, I think we're 15-11, which is 58% winning percentage. The 5 seed is 3.5 games away, I believe. And so it's all been bunched up. There's no team. I didn't look at the standings, but I texted you guys the other day. Nobody is playing over 700 basketball this season so far. And if you go back, the last time that happened over the course of an entire season was the 1978-79 season. And this NBA season overall, I wasn't alive, but in terms of my understanding of NBA history, the late 70s, like after 76 through 79, before Magic and Bird came in 80, those were it was a very wide open league. And that's just my impression of the league right now, is that it's wide open enough to where, like, even if you're from the perspective of like being prudent about the Lakers' long-term prospects, and that's a whole nother conversation with layers that we don't have time to get into now. Even in that respect, it's like, you could say that about a lot of teams, and it's so open that if you've got LeBron and Anthony Davis, let's hope, you know, there's opportunity there, even though it looked very grim earlier.
Yeah. Think about what your feelings were about this team after they gave up 50 something points against the Mavs on Christmas Day in a quarter, and the amount of resolve and resiliency that this team is showing is fantastic. And I will say with even more in my chest, that was not the case last year. Last year's team was always looking for the next thing that was supposed to come to boost them up. And this team is looking at themselves and saying, we can do it.
Yep.
And I look at a team like that, Mike, and I think to myself, I can root for these guys and feel good about rooting for these guys because they are rewarding us with their effort and energy and play each night. And that doesn't mean they're winning every game. They've won 3 in a row, though, their best win streak of the season, or tied for it. And they've got Atlanta tomorrow, and then they go on the road for a couple of games, and then they're right back at home to play a ton of games at Staples Crypto, where they are now 9-8 at home. And they have an opportunity here to build a rhythm, even with their injury situation and everything else sort of clouding things for everyone else. The picture is not clear, but these guys, they are looking inward instead of outward. And they're saying, what can we do? And that's also, too, where I want to credit Coach Ham, because every time he gets asked about some external factor, he is talking about we're only talking about us here. We're trying to do the thing in order for us to be the best version of ourselves that we can be. And this team is taking on that mindset, and they are rewarding us with their play, win or lose. I feel like, oh man, they're getting after it this game. And so it's to me, again, like, I hope that there is something on the horizon for this team where we feel like, oh, everyone is rowing in the same direction and everyone feels like it's time to go for it, because the players are out there showing us that they want that.
All right. That was a fun one. We'll be back tomorrow. Got a couple of games we'll preview this weekend, maybe get into some other topics around the team. But until then, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out in front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic, got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game.
Rebound to Lonnie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his 8th block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed.
a Laker to get MVP chance
in Boston. Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move.
Two, one,
miss it.
Bryant. Unbelievable.
For the victory.
It's over.
And shot clock now to five.
Bryant.
Yes. And then with a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
That insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic. Trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.